When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your day podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Tuesday, April 30th. Still so much to catch up on from the past week in the tennis world. So much so that we have a second edition of the podcast for all of you listeners today. On this episode, I want to offer my thoughts on the WTA side of things of this week's 1,000 level event in Madrid. So many different storylines to cover as we approach the second half of the quarterfinal round of women's singles, of course. The headline is the return of a dominant Iga Swiatek. Oh my goodness, through her first three rounds of play, 1-4 over Wang Shiyu, 1-1 over Sarana Kersteo, 1-0 over Sara Cerebes Tormo. She looked like someone who has won the French Open already three times in her career, someone who enters every clay court event as the number one contender on the list of players, regardless of who else is in the draw. That said, she got her first test, certainly, in her Tuesday quarterfinal matchup against Beatrice Haddad-Maia, and I do think this week was a reminder that Haddad-Maia has made a semifinals at the French Open for a reason. Again, the physicality she brings on this surface, the weight of shot she brings, the heaviness of that forehand cross, how far it drags you outside the court. It took Swiatek a second to adjust to those Haddad-Maia patterns. That said, again, the movement on display from Swiatek down the stretch in sets 2 and 3 as she separated herself all week long. It's just been a reminder of why Iga Swiatek is the world number one. And I want to offer my extensive thoughts on how she's looked throughout the course of her run to the semifinals in Madrid. Beyond that, you know, because again, if the world number one is playing world number one tennis and at her best, I just think that's the most impactful storyline. It's impossible for us to ignore. I think beyond that, the biggest storyline has to probably be Mira Andreeva. I mean, anytime someone at 17 years old, I forgot her birthday recently passed, happy belated to you, someone at 17 years old in the top 50, of course, that's one of the top storylines to monitor, but for her to make the quarterfinals of this 1,000 level event and not just reach the quarterfinals, but who she's beaten on her way to this quarterfinal, straight set victories over Paulini, Vondrousova, three set wins over Naskova, Townsend. Let's get into the mechanics of why Mira Andreeva is able to have this sort of success so early in her career. What separates her already from everyone else in the field? I do think there are some definitive traits for me to point out. So I want to get into that on today's show. Obviously, it's the first time in a long time we've had Aryna Sabalenka in the final stages of a big event, and she's had to survive, three sets, I believe, in every one of her victory so far this week. How has she done it? I want to offer my thoughts on that, talk about the continued shining power tennis of an Elena Rybakina. How about Madison Keys today? In typical fashion, drops that first set 6-love real quick, but able to rebound three-set victory over Anja Burgess. Speaks to, again, 18 months now. When Keys is healthy, her best tennis has been up there with anyone else right now in the women's game. Again, not the best of the best, but in that 5-12 range, it's kind of where Madison Keys has lived when healthy for 18 months consecutively now. So we'll look at her week, get into everything else. There are also a couple of 125K events on the calendar this week I think you should know about if you're a tennis fan. So again, on this show, I want to offer my thoughts on everything happening on the WTA side of things over the past week and moving forward in the pro tennis world, of course. If you want to hear me catch you up on everything that's happened on the men's side, just scroll down on your Mini Break podcast feed. If you want to hear about everything happening at another level of the tennis world, certainly we find college tennis as exciting as anything happening in the pro tour. You can do so by tuning into the Great Shot podcast feed, or you can watch us each and every night live, 9 p.m. Eastern time on our YouTube channel. We'll have shows every day this week in the buildup to the start of our coverage on Friday of the 2024 NCAA tournament. It's postseason play, the intensity, the passion, which is always amplified at the collegiate level, that much more so over the course of the next few weeks. And our Cracked Rackets team is so excited to play a part of that coverage. So be on the lookout these next 2 weekends. Extensive coverage on the Great Shot podcast feed and live on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel of all of the action, both before, during, and after, as it all unfolds, of course. It's something we take a lot of pride in. It's something we work very hard on. So if you're a tennis fan, trust me, tune in. It's something you will enjoy. You will be hooked the moment you watch your first match. That said, thank you to the tireless efforts of Daniel Westhoff, our producer, who we work nonstop, not just every month, every day, but this month of May coming up in particular. A thank you as well to the support we get from all of you listeners, as well as the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. All right, let's talk WTA Madrid. Let's start with the world number one looking the part. I will repeat those first three victories for Iga Swiatek. I know that 1-4 scoreline against Wang Shiyu, again, relatively unnotable in the scale of Iga performances we've seen over the years, but come on, 1-1 over Kirstea, 1-love over Cerebes Tormo, leave it in, Daniel Westhoff, but 6-1, 6-love there. And by the way, the one game she dropped was a game on serve. Then again, the bounce back, 4-6, 6-love, 6-2 over Beatriz Haddad-Mile to reach the semifinals of Madrid. The thing that has always separated Iga Swiatek on this surface from the rest of the field is how fluidly she moves in and out of corners. I get to repeat this just about every podcast because it's the clay court season. What separates good from great movers on this surface? Good movers slide out of their shots. The best movers on clay, they slide into them. And Iga's sliding backhand, which on hard courts, always exhilarating. It's that much more amplified on this surface where she's just so fluid in and out of that backhand corner. And she needed every bit of that fluidity, every bit of that speed to dig herself out of corners against the Beatriz Haddad-Maya, who her go-to pattern, particularly ad side, slice wide first serve to set up the first forehand, which she can play everywhere. And for the first 10 minutes, she'll play that first forehand into the open court, make Iga hit that on the run forehand. She did that pattern in particular more than anything else, because if you're going to attack anything for Iga, I guess you try to attack that on the run forehand. That said, once she opens up that part of the court, now she starts hitting behind you with that forehand. She starts moving in behind that first serve if she cuts it wide enough. And you know, Beatriz Haddad-Maya, very successful as a serve and volleyer when she wants to throw that tactic in. Then she'll start to throw that slice into your body. Then she'll flatten things out into the tee. She can do that slice tee on the deuce side to open up the first forehand inside out into the Iga forehand. It just took Iga a second to get adjusted to those patterns. Of course, Haddad-Maya wants to take big cuts on the return of serve as well. And if you're going to beat Iga, you have to be aggressive. You have to be willing to miss and take your cuts, take big swings in opportunities or moments when you otherwise perhaps wouldn't. Haddad-Maya did all of that for one set of tennis. She took that opening set 6-4, but again, it's the stamina of Iga Swiatek, the continued persistence, the continued physicality, the fact that she found her range much more successfully with her first forehand, gave herself more margin, went less after the alley, less after these outer third lines, and more just into the open space to get Haddad-Maya on the run, because Haddad-Maya is such a different player when her feet are set than when they aren't. Not that she's a bad mover, but a little bit stiff in and out of corners. And again, when Iga gets you stretched into the outer thirds and starts, as head coach for Oklahoma State men's tennis Dustin Taylor says, one-in-one-ing you, moving you from one corner to the next. One shot here, one shot there, one shot back, and the next shot there. By the way, I successfully employed that tactic to come back against my dear friend Blake Ahati, whom I hit with when I was home. And a shout out to Blake for graduating business school successfully. I mean, Iga Świątek has just been successful in everything she's done over the course of the week. And while she's no longer number one in both hold and break percentage in this 2024 season, she's number three in break percentage, 45.7. That's the number that's dipped. And on this surface more than anything else, I mean, again, the one game she's dropped has been on the return, was on the serve against Cerebez Tormo in her 1-1 victory over Sorana Kirstea, one of the two games she dropped on serve in that match. The return of serve on this surface, she has that much more time to, again, swing through the forehand successfully. Her ability to drive the backhand anywhere successful on any surface. She's just looked like herself again. And, you know, I'm not saying she didn't look like herself. She lost in the semifinals to Rybakina in a really fun three-set, two-hour, 49-minute semifinal. She steadied the course. Again, continues to roll through the players she should defeat. And yes, she dropped that opening set to Haddad Maia, but 4-6, 6-2, 6-love. That is a comfortable victory for the world number one, who, again, now overall you look for her 2024 season. She's 30-4, winning 88%. Of her matches. You look for her so far this year, excluding the Australian Open, she's made the semifinals and further, in all but two of her events, the Australian Open and Miami, where she lost a round of 16 to Alexandrova. 30-4 speaks for itself through the first 4 months of the season. And again, coming up is the Slam, where she has had the most success in her career. The Slam, where, of course, she is the two-time defending champion. She's looked the part of two-time defending champion so far this week at in Madrid into the semifinals, where a date with Madison Keys awaits. Now, I do want to talk about Madison Keys because she is one of those disruptors in any draw she enters when healthy, particularly over the last 18 months. And I'll run through the numbers of what precisely she's done in a little bit when we start to talk about the players who play power tennis and the success that they have had so far this week in Madrid. But I want to turn next to another player whose success I think is predicated on the physicality she's already able to bring match in, match out. And of course, that 17-year-old Amira Andreeva, who again did turn 17 April 29th. That was yesterday. So a happy belated birthday to her. What has she treated herself to in her birthday week? Well, a run to the quarterfinals at this 1,000 level event in Madrid. With this run, I mentioned this earlier, Andreeva now all the way up to number 39 in the live rankings, up four spots, six spots off the career high of 33, which she reached back in February. But it's, again, who she's beaten and how she's done it on this run to the quarterfinal. Wins over Townsend, Noskova, former French Open finalist Marketa Vondrousova, who she beat 7-5, 6-1. Her 6-4 win in the round of 16 over Jasmine Paolini. She was broken five times against Paolini and yet again continued to be able to step up to that line successfully, and just the depth on the return of serve. And again, Andreeva's not short. Like, you look for Mira Andreeva, I'm going to say 5'11", 6', probably, where she's listed at. You look on the WTA website, Mira Andreeva, 5'7"? Really? I feel like with her levers, like, again, the arms feel a little bit longer than that, right? And just, again, I feel like she uses her length pretty well around the court. She's pretty fluid in and out of the corners. And moving to that backhand wing in particular, I am so impressed by the depth Andreeva is able to generate on that backhand wing when she's on the run. The backhand wing's just special in general, but again, how well she moves the forehand around the court. It's a little bit flatter. Reminds me of that 2021 Raducanu forehand, where kind of takes it earlier on the rise, can beat you to the spot, but then again, has no shame in playing that high, elevated, loopy ball to buy herself time to recover. And again, with how well she moves, she is able to extend rallies so successfully. She wears you down physically, and then she fires some first serves at you. Now, you know, again, first serve percentage hasn't been exceptional, and she's certainly been broken at least three times in every match that she's played so far this week, but it's that physicality she brings to the rallies. It's, again, it's the depth she's able to generate in her corners. I know I can point to you multiple specific times. Again, the drop shots, the short angles from Vondrousova on multiple different occasions, they just didn't work because Andreeva is able to get to those spots and able to generate enough pace, enough precision with the spots she returns with. And she's not a comfortable volleyer, but hits the approach shot well enough that most of the volleys she has to hit pretty easy in that Vondrousova match. Again, comes back with that same physicality in round number four, able to advance past the springy Paolini, who just, she was able to get that ball above Paolini's shoulder. And Paolini, again, not the tallest player on tour. If you can get that ball up on her and keep it out of her strike zone, again, kind of diminishes her ability to play first strike and dictate with you around the court and just play through comfortably. You know, she had to be 7 feet behind the baseline in order to do that with the height and elevation of the ball Andreeva was throwing at her. I just like the different gears Mira Andreeva can hit. She kind of bait and switches you throughout the course of every rally. And I'm still not certain about the weapons, but again, the physicality, the way she competes at 17 years old, that much is clearly there. And again, beats two top 15 players in Vondrousova and Paulini, and beats two top 15 players on the year in Paulini and Noskova on this run to the quarterfinal. She's 32-13. She's won 71% of her matches over the last 52 weeks. You look for her now with this run, Andreeva up to number 32 in the points race so far this year. And again, that's through 4 months of significant play with 1,000 level events in Indian Wells, Miami, now here in Madrid, of course, a 500 in Stuttgart, a slam in Australia, the 1,000 level event in, I forget where in the Middle East it is, but a bunch of stuff there as well. 4 months with now a significant sample size of matches on the board. She's 32-13 overall over her last 52 weeks, 12-5 now overall here on the year. It's her third quarterfinal in 6 events on the season. 17 years old, again, she can only play so many matches, limited by the rules, and yet when we have seen her, she has played top 25 level tennis, and it's the fact that she is already athletically capable of playing that at that level and sustaining it over the course of 2-plus hours. Again, what a run for her. Now she gets the test of tests as she's going to face the weapons of Aryna Sabalenka. Sabalenka knocking out, obviously, the very much informed Danielle Collins, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3 in her round of 16 matchup. And look, Sabalenka, the big thing for her this week, is how she's been able to survive in each and every match that she plays. The storyline a little bit different in all of those battles. It started, of course, with Magda Linette in round number one. I watched that one live at my parents' house. And, you know, I saw the let cord of her forehand that helped her break Linette 4-5-3, and then she's able to serve things out fairly successfully because you could see it just broke Linette's spirit in that third set. You know, again, she drops the second set to young American Robin Montgomery in the round of 32, but able to successfully bounce back 6-4 in the third there. And then, again, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3 over Danielle Collins. There were some typical highs and lows for both Collins and Sabalenka, but it was the power tennis of Sabalenka that ultimately prevailed, her ability to win just a few more free points behind that first serve, where, again, she won 66% of her first serves, won 68% of those first serve points. The big thing, kept the double fault count under 5 and thus just had those opportunities to play first strike, get Collins stretched into the outer third. And Collins has never been the most comfortable of movers. I think she's particular. Even though her weapons are still successful on this surface, I do think she is less comfortable moving in and out of the corners on it. And, you know, again, Sabalenka's weapons just push you into the corner successfully when she's landing that ball in the court. That's been the key thing, is when she's needed it most, Sabalenka's been able to put 4-5 returns in the court in a return game. And when she's landing 5 returns in the court, she's more likely than not breaking if that return game goes 8 points or fewer, because, again, the weight of her shot just so overwhelming with every swing. And, you know, again, that's a really good win for her over a Danielle Collins, who obviously coming in had won, what, her 7 victories in Miami, 6 victories in Charleston, 2 in Madrid. So she had won 15 consecutive matches going into that Madrid round of 16. She was up a first set as well in that match. Sabalenka able to end the streak. Now, again, Danielle Collins is a top 8 player, certainly right now, maybe even a top 5 player on the WTA Tour. Like, you feel that confidently about her because she is that fit. She is that confident. She's rolling right now and played extraordinary first strike tennis. And, you know, again, when she lands her, when she is seeing the return comfortably, and it's tough to do that against someone who hits the serve as well as Sabalenka, but when she sees the return comfortably with how aggressive she is on that return of serve, again, that weight of shot can overwhelm anyone. It nearly overwhelms Sabalenka, and yet the difference, again, Sabalenka's ability to just win a few more free points behind that first serve. Sabalenka's rounding into form. Obviously has made 6 consecutive semifinals or further at the majors. Would love to see that streak extend at Roland Garros. the big thing, again, hadn't played a ton of matches, right, since the Australian Open. Played Dubai, Indian Wells, Miami, Stuttgart, a total of 8 matches between those 4 events. Now she's into her 4th match and, again, gets the matchup against an Andreeva who I just think the weight of shot for Sabalenka will be too much for Andreeva to handle. And while Andreeva's pretty good with her plus one placement, you know, again, Sabalenka 5'11", that ball's not going to be at her shoulder. That still ball will still be waist high. And, you know, again, I don't think Andreeva is quite ready to deal with the Sabalenka weaponry you look for Andreeva. Yes, Jasmine Paolini can fire from the baseline, but Jasmine Paolini's second serve certainly hangs up there for Andreeva to get comfortable swings in. Same for Marketa Vondrousova. Yeah, she moves the ball so well around the outer thirds, but again, it's not the power tennis that she plays. It's the finesse tennis that she plays that overwhelms opponents, and I think Andreeva physically prepared for that finesse. That's not Sabalenka. Sabalenka just overwhelms you with her power. It's the ultimate test for Mira Andreeva. Sabalenka 1-0 in the career head-to-head. You know, again, Sabalenka makes the semifinal here in Madrid. Gets a shot at an Elena Rybakina heading into Roland Garros. What more could she have asked for from this week in trying to, again, build up her confidence and build up her calluses going into that year's second major? So, successful week for Aryna Sabalenka, even if at times it hasn't always been the prettiest tennis, as Brad Gilbert says. Winning ugly, that's half the battle in this sport, and Sabalenka has certainly managed to do that and even more over her run to this quarterfinals. It's going to be a really fun matchup, by the way, between her and Mira Andreeva there. Sabalenka not the only player playing power tennis that shined through. Again, now's the moment where I want to highlight 18th-seeded Madison Keys, 5-7, love 6, 7-5, 6-1. She manages to come back against Ange Jabeur. Yeah, broken 3 times in the opening set, but then broken just once the rest of the way. And you look for Keys this week, wins over Samsonova, Goff, and dare I say, a very much in form relative to the rest of her year, Ange Jabeur. 2 of her wins in 3 sets over Goff Jabeur, respectively. Also got a 6-6 win over Bagu in round number 1. Look, Madison Keys hasn't played a ton of tennis so far here in 2024. You look for her overall now, she's 7-3 on the year. She's just 26-12 over her last 52 weeks. Again, just 38 matches in 52 weeks of tennis. That's a very low number for someone who's still 20 overall in the world entering the week. And now with this run, back up to number 16 in the live rankings. And that speaks to, when Madison Keys has been on court, she has played at a minimum top 15, and I would venture to say top 12, even at times top 8 tennis. Again, 7-3 here this year, 33-15 overall last year, 30-20 in 2022. But you have to remember, she made the semifinals of Australia, quarterfinals of Indian Wells, round of 16 Roland Garros, and semifinals of Cincinnati during the course of that 2022 season. So the highs were certainly there. You know, you look for her last year, again, title in Eastbourne, quarterfinals Wimbledon, round of 32 Australian Open, played a really fun match with Victoria Azarenka, but then of course the semifinal run at the US Open. The runs have been there for Madison Keys for about 2.5 years now consecutively. The highs are still extraordinarily high, and that's why, despite not playing the most rigorous of schedules, she has sustained a top 20 ranking pretty consistently over the course of time. And again, to be able to do that speaks to the level she's played when at her best at some of these events. And, you know, again, she just plays the sort of front foot, plus one, disrupting power tennis. I don't care who you are. If you're Coco Gauff, you're going to have problems dealing with just, again, the weight of shot coming into your forehand repeatedly. And yeah, when you can get Keys stretched into the outer thirds, it doesn't matter what surface you are on. She is not someone who is looking to extend rallies consistently. But man, she plays that backhand slice a little bit better now out of that corner to extend rallies defensively. She's a little bit more comfortable playing high and heavy, that elevated forehand down the line to buy herself a little bit of time, or at least force her opponent, okay, you're going to have an on-the-rise look, but you have to play it to the open court, because as I alluded to earlier today, down the line, you know, that's the most difficult shot to hit when playing that on-the-rise backhand. It just makes your life a little bit, because it's the highest portion of the net. Anyways, doing that, you know, the fact that her power tennis, yeah, for a set it wasn't clicking against Jabeur, but once it started to click, it's just really hard to play slice, to play drop shot when the ball is coming in that heavy into you. And, you know, again, it became more difficult for Jabeur to do that. When she wasn't landing first serves, it became more difficult for her to take that ball early on the rise because, you know, again, there's no need to take the ball early on the rise against Madison Keys. If you get her stretched, you're probably hitting a first volley and an easy put away. You know, the key thing for Jabeur was playing the slice, playing the short angles to get Keys out of the center third on the rise. Yeah, she had some success certainly doing that, but, you know, it felt like most of those were just in rhythm approach shots more than trying to be out of the rhythm and taking a ball early on the rise. I guess those are more called for on the rise, not that she didn't do it. Anyways, Madison Keys disrupted that. When Keys was landing first serves, when she's on her front foot, when she gets a clean look on that backhand return of serve, or even a clean cut, which she gets more frequently on the forehand on this slower surface, Keys just, again, is able to impose her will. And this is a significant 1,000-level semifinal run for Madison Keys. You keep in mind, in her career, Madison Keys on clay courts, plenty of success. You know, 80 and 47 overall. You look for her tour-level events specifically, 71 and 44. Obviously, this is someone who's made the semifinals of the French Open. Now, it was back in 2018, but quarterfinals in 2019 as well. Hasn't made it to week number two since 2019. If healthy, I think she snaps that streak this year. Again, just the service firing, when she's on her front foot, when she's moving well, when she's playing confidently, Madison Keys has proven that she can play top 12 tennis over the course of 2.5 years now consecutively, and we're certainly seeing that this week. Just the fourth career matchup between her and Iga Świątek. And again, with the pace she plays with her willingness to take, you know, aggressive cuts, even if it's not the most opportune of moments in a rally, you have to do that if you want to have any shots against the machine. That is Iga Świątek. I expect Świątek to get through, but I'm excited to see what Keys has in store for us in that matchup in Madrid. And then, obviously, Elena Rybakina keeps on rolling. You look for the current number four seed and world number four right now, according to the live rankings. By the way, she has a chance to supplant world number three, Aryna Sabalenka, if Sabalenka loses this next round and Rybakina wins the event but doesn't have the opportunity to jump to world number two, where Coco Gauff is right now. By the way, both of them, though, are... Rybakina can't. Let's leave all of this in, Westhoff. Let's try that one more time, though. Rybakina currently 4 in the live rankings. If she wins the event and Sabalenka loses in the quarterfinals, Rybakina can become the world number 3. If Sabalenka reaches the semifinals of this event, she will stay above Elena Rybakina. If she reaches the finals of this event, she will supplant Coco Gauff for number 2 in the world rankings. But even if she wins it, she cannot supplant Iga Świątek as the world number 1 after this. That said, certainly still playing for some movement up at the top of the rankings. And look, for Elena Rybakina, she keeps on rolling. Straight set wins for her this week over Bronsetti, Sharif, Sarah Bialik. Now, were those the toughest draws? Absolutely not. She's been broken 4 times in 6 sets. She fought off 13 of 15 break points against a frisky Sarah Bialik, who is just going to be a miserable out for whomever draws her early in the French Open. Again, a player who I really enjoyed her level, particularly in her round 3 victory, 3-1 over Ashlyn Kruger. But the power tennis, again, of Elena Rybakina, disrupting. She's now 52-12, winning 81% of her matches over a 52-week and 64-match sample size. She's 29-4 overall here, again, right behind Iga Świątek, winning 88% of her matches this year. You look for her overall. She has reached the quarterfinals or further in every event she has played this season, except for the French Open, where there was that weird second round 7-6, 22-20 third set tiebreak loss to Anna Blinkova. Again, other than that, she has reached the quarterfinals or further of every event that she's played this year. Iga Świątek fans even would acknowledge that's world number one caliber tennis. That's what Iga's done for 2.5 years, 3 years now consecutively. That's finally the platform of an elevation, the level of consistency Rybakina has elevated herself to. It was much needed given the post-Australian Open dip of Aryna Sabalenka, and that level's been sustained here in Madrid, despite what has obviously been a softer draw. It just speaks to the confidence, the consistency, and the overwhelming power tennis Elena Rybakina continues to play. So no surprise to see her with that draw through to the quarterfinals, where a date where surprise quarterfinalist Yulia Putintseva awaits. And that is where I want to begin the rest of my takes as we look at everything that has unfolded thus far in Madrid. I mean, credit to Yulia Putintseva, who with this run inside the top 50 once again, back up to number 41, is the 29-year-old. She just moves so well on this surface. Again, slides into those balls in the outer third, able to recover extraordinarily well. Now, you know, the draw has been opportune. She got the withdrawal from Chin Wen in the round of 64, 2-2 over Caroline Dalahide, who will never be at her best on clay. Then the real thing was, it was a battle of physicality, and she just was able to outdo Kasatkina 3-6, 6-2, 6-2 in a match that was very much Spider-Man Mimi in the round of 16. But no one has ever questioned Putintseva's competitive spirit. Like, just the fact that she does give you that 110% and is willing to grind you down and is willing to throw moonballs at you and is willing to throw in the drop shots at you. And yeah, the pace is never going to be overwhelming, but it's, again, death by a thousand paper cuts. And thus far this week against opponents where, yeah, it's been an opportune playing style to play, but it's been a game style that's been deployed successfully. Obviously a big week for her to get back in the top 50, given, you know, again, how few grass court events there are. It's really hard to get into the good ones because the best players all want to play them. You're a top 50 player, though. You're going to get into them if Putintseva wants to, and she is someone who looks to rack up the match count. Again, that pathway will be available to her. You know, other than that, again, that's Anjabur, massive week, 0-4 win over Ostapenko. And, you know, again, when she was up 6-love in that first set on Madison Keys, I thought she might be the second storyline I discussed, because there hasn't been much for Anjabur to celebrate so far in this 2024 season. This is just her second quarterfinal of the year. And again, getting wins over Leyla Fernandez in three sets and following that up with the hour 7-minute victory over Yelena Ostapenko, even if, you know, Ostapenko was just one of those poor serving days and one of those days where everything was misfiring. Still, it's the run on Jabeur needed to just get things going. And again, for Jabeur, who right now currently sitting at 9 in the live rankings, she obviously has some significant points coming up to defend. You look up for her last year, quarterfinalist Roland Garros, obviously finalist at Wimbledon as well. Just needed something to get the confidence going. And wins over Jabeur, wins over Fernandez, Ostapenko, exactly what the doctor ordered for Anjabur. Even if she's still not playing her best tennis, it was significantly better. The movement's just far more comfortable on this surface. Felt like she was sliding without pain for the first time in a while. Still obviously knocked out in a disappointing fashion given how that first set played out against Keys, but good bounce back for Anjabur. Great week for Sara Cerebez Tormo. Yeah, she got blitzed by Iga Swiatek, but with her run back into the top 50, the 27-year-old who dealt with so many different injuries, she is, again, that scratch you just can't reach on your back, puts a million balls in play, and that dose of physicality, that contrast to so much of the power tennis we see, it's a delight. It's a really fun playing style to see. Again, good wins for her over Azarenka, Svitolina to reach that round of 16 to get back to, the top 50. Coco Gauff got a good win over Diana Yastremska despite the disappointing loss in three sets to Madison Keys. I thought Gauff looked pretty good in her first two matches. Obviously, the 0-0 win over Roos, not much of a test there. There is a delta between her and Sabalenka, Swiatek, and Rybakina, but I still would give her that benefit of the doubt compared to the rest of the field, despite that loss to a very much informed Madison Keys. But again, that ability to the fact that power tennis still disrupts her a little bit more consistently than Swiatek, that's why I would still have that delta in the tier between her and those tier one players I referred to a little bit earlier. You know, again, Kasatkina, yeah, it's a disappointing loss, obviously, to Putintseva, but a good win for her over Pavluchenkova in the previous round. You know, I talked about some of these players last week when breaking out the draw and who had some successful round number ones. I even think if you're Emma Navarro to reach round number three of this event, yeah, Navarro knocked out by 11th-seeded Haddad Maia 4-4, but she held seed at a 1,000-level event. That is still something. Like, she just hasn't had an opportunity to even attempt to do much in her career at an event of this scale, and I think doing it has to be considered a success, even if it's not the overwhelming quarterfinal, semifinal runs we saw from her earlier in the year. You know, Paolini, another round of 16. Is she a top 15 player, 16 player? Hard to deny that given the consistency of her results so far this year. It was a very revealing, again, kind of consolidating moment in Madrid as well. The big takeaways, obviously, Mira Andreeva is just this good whenever she steps onto the court right now on tour. Sabalenka starting to finally look like herself once again. A reminder about Madison Keys, but Świątek, Rybakina, Sabalenka were my big highlights looking at Madrid, and those have been the players at the top of the game now for 3 years consecutively, albeit at different times on the calendar. And obviously Coco Gauff, I kind of glossed over there, but I should talk about her more in the lead-up to the French Open. We will do that the next time we have a guest. That said, that's everything right now going on the women's side in Madrid. Two really fun matches tomorrow. Andreeva Sabalenka, the headliner. But can Rybakina roll another opponent in Yulia Putintseva? Again, the draw has opened up for her beautifully to do so. But there's a world where, again, our semifinals, Świątek versus Keys, Rybakina versus Sabalenka. I don't think I have to pitch those to you as must-see television. It's going to be a fun home stretch in Madrid. The good news, if you're a WTA fan looking for more action, is there are two really fun WTA 2 125K events on the calendar as well. Excuse me, two 125K WTA events on the calendar. One of them in St. Mau. You know, we did have an upset early, number two seed Anna Blinkova knocked out by Frenchwoman Jessica Ponchet, 7-5, 6-3. Other seeds knocked out in round one, fourth seed Varvara Gracheva by the French wildcard Louis Boisson. You also had sixth seed Renata Zaranzua knocked out by Frenchwoman Chloe Piquet. But Peyton Stearns, the number three seed, gets an much-needed win and in top seed Clara Burel, fifth seeded Daria Seville, seventh seeded Katie Vallinets, all winners. Vallinets, by the way, according to the Tennis Abstract Singles Forecast, the favorite entering the round of 16. Seventh seed will face wildcard Carole Monet. She's got Alizé Cornet in her draw. And by the way, Cornet announcing the French Open will be the last event of her career. Now, Alizé Cornet is not a Hall of Famer. Reached a career high of number 11 back in 2009. You look for Alizé Cornet in her career. Obviously, the big note when she made that first round of 16 at the majors. What was that? I'm blanking on when that moment was. I apologize. Reached her first round of 16 at the majors Reached her first quarterfinals. There it is, at the majors at that 2022 Australian Open. Her lone quarterfinal at the majors. This is someone who, by the way, in her career, you look at the tour level, has made 15 different finals, 6 different tour-level titles, the most recent 2018 in Stade. Again, 6 tour-level titles, career high of number 11. She's been a top 100 player throughout the course of her career, and you look for Wikipedia. I apologize for not using Tennis Abstract, but I'm pretty sure Wikipedia will give this to me pretty quickly. You look for her in terms of career number of main draws played at the Slams. Alizé Cornet has played 71 main draws at the majors in her career. As such, not a shock to learn, Alizé Cornet, $10.3 million in prize money in her career. You throw in endorsements as well. It was a notable career, and someone who, again, has been extraordinarily well-liked, I believe, throughout the course of her career as well. It's not a Hall of Fame career, but it is a veteran we will certainly miss as she has played. So, you know, again, her first major came all the way back at the 2005 French Open, 2 decades for Alizé Cornet of French Opens. And in fact, this will be her 20th consecutive appearance at the French Open. That is remarkable consistency and longevity for someone given how long the calendar is and how many injuries and nicks can pick up. Anyways, she's in action, and it's one of her final events of her career in the final month of her career in St. Mao. So if you are an Alizé Cornet fan out there, make sure you tune in to that WTA 125K action. Again, Vallinets 26.1% favorite, then Burel 18.6, Savise Stearns point both 12.8% after that. Of course, the other 125K event happening in Spain this week. You look at where things stand right now in the draw. Again, still early in the action, but top seed Emma Navarro in action there. She'll take on American Bernarda Perry. You have a bunch of Americans in the top half of that draw. Elizabeth Mandelic, Claire Liu in action as well. Your number two seed, Katerina Siniaková, straight set win over American Alicia Parks. Got top 100 Americans, Sonia Kennan, Ashlyn Kruger in action. Action Magdalena, Freak, Kami Osorio, also seeds in the draw. You've got Erika Andreeva, also a talented young Russian still on the rise. And by the way, Erika Andreeva sitting in the top 100 right now after her round of 16 appearance. She's up to number 97, three off of her career high. Again, Emma Navarro, of course, going to play more tennis. That's what she's done for 3 years now consecutively. She likes to get after it out on court. You can't blame her for it, but plenty to enjoy in that action over the course of the week if, again, the Madrid matches aren't enough for you. Again, we'll have plenty of tennis coming for you this weekend as well as we kick off our coverage of the 2024 college tennis postseason. Again, we will have live shows for you each of the next two nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time on our YouTube channel to get you excited, and then our coverage kicks off Friday, and we will have action Saturday, Sunday, as well as the following weekend on our YouTube channel. And then final sight action shifts on over to ESPN Plus, which of course we are excited to be a part of and we'll tell you more about in the near future. Of course, a shout out as always to the tireless efforts of our super producer Daniel Westa for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout out and thank you as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products in the tennis world. With that said, for our fantastic super producer Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Crack Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say, that's the break, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.